History of Holden Village, Conversations with the Reverend Erman Lunder at his home in Providence Point, Issaquah, Washington, on March 20, 1985. Conversation was recorded by Bill Derrickson, made a part of the oral history of Holden Village. Erman Lunder, then an active professor at the Lutheran Bible Institute of Seattle, has been involved in the early development of Holden Village since its very beginnings as a Christian retreat and renewal center. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you.
You are now retired, or what passes for retirement.
That's right.
I'm sure you're very...
Retired and refired.
Yeah. That's usually the case with all of us.
Yeah.
At the time that Holden Village, as we know it today, came into existence, you were on the staff of Lutheran Bible Institute, and by virtue of that, you really got involved with the village simply because the village had originally been given to the Lutheran Bible Institute by the Howe Sound Mining Company, right?
That's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I had read a little bit about Holden Village in the papers. And then one day, one of our students, Wes Preed, kind of interesting, I had contact with him first in Alaska. And he was interested in LBI, and I talked to him about it, and he said he thought he might want to come. He was originally from Webster, South Dakota. And he came to LBI and went and attended for 2 years. During his second year, toward graduation time, he began to say something to us as faculty that he'd had some contact with Howe Sound Mining Company, and he thought it would be a good retreat center for LBI. And so he began to sort of urge us to go up and look at it. So we arranged to go up there. I was along with the group that went up there the first time.
What month or date was that, do you remember?
That was the end of May, 1960.
All right.
And so five of us went up, Dr. Stein and his son Randy, our business manager then, Thorson, Dave Thorson, and Wes Breeb and myself. So there were five of us. On a windy day, taking Dave Thorson's boat, we hugged the shore all the way up there. It took us 4 hours to get up to Lucerne. We had a very interesting time at Lucerne. A gal had a Chevrolet Land Rover, a Chevrolet carry-all, and took us up there. On the way up, I was sitting way in the back, and I said to her, "Listen, you've got a flat tire." "No," she says, "it's just the rough roads." She rode out, drove on some further, and after a while, I shouted out, and I said, "Say, listen, why don't we stop and take a look at that tire back there?" And we did, and it was flat. And she'd been riding on it, and she didn't have a jack along, so we found a piece of log and pried it up and changed tires for her. As a result, she took us up there for nothing. And we stayed overnight that night.
Well, luckily, she had a spare, though.
Yeah, she had a spare. That's fortunate for her, too, and for us.
Yeah.
We stayed there that night. We slept in the hospital. And we had a chance that evening to look things over quite a bit. We found a lot of stuff in the lockers, filled to the brim. And we were quite excited the more we saw it, and something about the quietness of the place just grabbed us all. We stayed there until about noon the next day, when we walked back to Lucerne. This time we walked back. And then we went from there to the forest department we went down the lake, and then we went to the forest service in Wenatchee, and made that contact. And Pastor Stein and Randy, particularly with Wes Preed, went in. I didn't go along in on that. So that was the first contact that I had with Providence Point. And with me, it became a type of excitement that says...
You mean this Lucerne?
Yeah,
not Providence Point.
Oh, I'm at Providence Point now. I got to watch my words. Yeah, at Lucerne. Okay.
Okay, go ahead. We'll let that in.
That tells where I'm at.
This was at Lucerne.
Is it? Yeah.
And the village.
And then we went to Wenatchee. Mm-hmm. And at Wenatchee we stopped to see the Forest Service.
Yeah.
People. And we came back, and Randy Stime, I think, became quite a bit of the push in this thing. Mm-hmm. And he was the one that went to see men like Gilbert and other outstanding names of that time. And I think he did quite a little pushing on it. I don't know how much his father, Gene Stime, did, but Randy really gave a lot of push to it. And I think he should be given credit for that. And as a result of that, he organized and got men together who would go up then later on in the summer. And I think that was in June that they went up, a month later.
This was June the 60th.
In 1960.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then what happened after that? Can you kind of trace the history for that? Especially, are we interested in getting the history up to that first official incorporated board meeting of May the 10th, 1961. Now, a lot went on before that, I'm sure.
Yeah, there were several meetings, as I remember it, and the meetings were tied in with the fact that we felt at LBI that it was too big for us. And for that reason, they contacted, and I don't know who did the contacting, perhaps Pastor Stein, contacted the youth departments of the various churches with the idea at that time to have a youth, especially a place for youth, a youth retreat of some kind. We looked at it from that point of view, and that's why we contacted the youth departments, and they became interested. And as a result of that, we met at LBI. I don't have much recollections of all those meetings. I was on some of them and were not on others. I sat in when I could. Oftentimes I was on a Bible conference or something going on at the time. But I know that we met from time to time. PLU got into it, and there were quite a few who were really interested in it from Pacific Lutheran University. So we had men from there in on it too, right from the beginning. And I don't know if I can give it too much more. I believe Pastor Stime would be the one who would be able to trace through right during that period.
This is a fairly crucial period for us as far as any history of it is concerned, that is available to anybody coming up to the village to mm-hmm. want to look into it to satisfy either one's curiosity or do any further research on it.
One thing you may be interested in, we were quite interested in the mine itself when we first went up there. In fact, we went into the mine quite a ways. We were into one of the big rooms way in there. So that we saw that originally. We didn't see the dangers. We saw rather the possibility of being a real appeal for people to want to see this place and to also see what mining processes were going on.
Yeah, it was
on.
Quite large, wasn't it?
Very large, yeah.
A couple football fields or something?
I think
like
I heard three football
three
fields.
Three football fields.
And they had great piles of rock that was ready to come out of the mine at that time. And of course the mill was still there. There was somebody taking the beams out at the time we were there first. And so there was some of that going on. But the mill was, as a whole, right there when we first came there. And that was exciting to all of us.
As I understand it, somebody was doing the salvage work and then gave up on it because he wasn't making enough money on the thing here.
That's about it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the town was also there. That was still there. We went through all of that.
The miners' village.
The miners' village.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some tremendous places. We were amazed at some of the houses there. Of course, the snow had caused the fall of some of the roofs, but a lot of it was in real good shape when we first saw it. That was part of the excitement of seeing the whole place.
Yeah, it gathering from some of this, from some of the notes that I have, that it seemed like a lot of people had caught the excitement, the potentiality for the village, and it as of this date, it seems that their excitement has been fruitful, and we've really got something going up there. At least we hope so, under the guidance of the Lord, the Spirit, and so forth. I'm interested also in hearing a little bit more of LBI's involvement in it. Was there a gradual transition to others and LBI in that first year, in 1960, let's say, before we really got into the first big incorporation meeting?
Yeah, I think that the LBI was always in the center of it at that time, but there seemed to be a groundswell of interest, of especially interested laymen in the various churches, who themselves, many of them, had not been specially tied in with LBI, but were very interested in this. So that, for instance, Lloyd Nelson was one of the leaders from Bethel of Shoreline, where I was. And then we had several of the laymen from all the different churches all around, not only the then ELC, or became the ALC, but LCA, Missouri Synod, so that there were, I think this thing became a layman's specialty, and the lay people seemed to be the ones who really grabbed this thing.
Yeah, looking at some of those early reports after May 61, seems to indicate that there were quite a bunch of people there involved, laymen who were involved in with their enthusiasm, mm-hmm. as well as with their financial and physical support.
That's right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Gil Berg got into the leadership very early, mm-hmm. as I remember. He had contact, of course, through his business and through the background that he had contact with a lot of these laymen. So I think a lot of that came from him. So and I think he was on the LBI board at the time too. So that he saw the bigger picture of it. So it went beyond what we would say just LBI's interest.
Well, such people as Gil Berg and Wes Preeb, Gene Stein, and some of the early ones that were working along with you on this whole beginning history of the village, could have been looking just for a beautiful place, a private place, a kind of a sanctuary out in the Cascades, away from telephones and television and radios and all of that. But that really isn't what we ended up with, is it? We ended up with a kind of, we still have the physical place, but that which we call the spirit of Holden had to be discovered someplace along the line, and some people had to have some sort of vision of what could be done from a, not a philosophical, but perhaps a theological, or a theological point of view, in order to make the village involved in the kind of spirit that is now part and parcel of the whole village. Could you give us some idea of where that first got its impetus?
To begin with, the strong emphasis was to be a youth place. A place where youth could especially be helped, to, especially in their relationship with Jesus Christ, and then to move out and be discipled, and that the discipleship could be such that they would go on and become good, strong lay people for the Lord. I think Malibu in Canada was one of the things that both Randy Stime and Gene Stime were quite interested in, because they'd seen it, and they were interested in us carrying out that kind of a program. So when we hammered out the purposes for Holden Village, we found that there was some divergence, and therefore we wanted something that would tie in with all the people, not only the emphasis that some of us had. In my case, it was especially to help people to assurance of faith in Jesus. I found that a lot of our baptized, confirmed young people didn't know for sure about their relationship with Jesus. There had been no commitment. And from my point of view, it was to help them to that commitment. I had that sort of as a vision, because I remembered my own youth and the lacking of assured faith and lacking of commitment. And I think many had that point of view. Some would feel, well, people were brought into their baptism and they just took it for granted from there on. They didn't need to have a special type of time of a commitment. So that we just had to talk all those things through and come to what we were looking for. Holden Village had a special emphasis toward youth to begin with. I think that that became the focus, and that's why we moved in the direction of the youth departments of our church, of all the three major churches at that time. And that's how they got into it. And I think from...
This is a spin-off, really, of the spirit of LBI, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, because LBI, of course, was interested in educating and training youth in terms of real commitment to Christ.
And we felt that this would be a bigger place,
right,
to reach many more youth than what we could reach through the program we had at LBI. So, we thought this would expand to work beyond what LBI could. And,
yeah,
and getting the youth departments, that would broaden the whole thing. So some of us who were from LBI, I think I have to say for myself that my emphasis has been, if LBI is not serving the whole church, we got no excuse for existing as a school. And I felt that this would be another way in which to broaden this type of work in the lives of our youth and lay people of our church.
Right.
The word discipleship wasn't used at that time. That's come later. But this is something of what we were after, that they might be really discipled to be true followers of Jesus Christ, and that there might be a true commitment in their lives as a result.
So that the early days of Holden Village, as we know it today, were really days that concentrated on youth work and youth involvement. In fact, as reading through some of the notes here, I see where they had some study groups, they had field groups come up from PLU and other schools. Classes were held here in the summertime, a short interim type of class.
Bergstrand also, in 1961, I think they call them the Forerunners.
Forerunners, right.
The Forerunners came up, and they were there when we arrived for what we call the Parsonage Dwellers Retreat. And they had done a great deal of setting the tone, but he had youth from, I suppose, then Augustana Synod.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of them, and I don't know who all of them were, because they were leaving the day we came up. We went with them down to Lucerne and saw them all.
This was in 61?
In 61.
Yeah, well, what about summer of 60? What happened during that time?
Mostly during 1960 was kind of laying the foundation, moving together, and we did not get hammered out our main purpose then, I'm quite sure.
Mm-hmm.
That happened a little later. But during that time was getting people interested. And then another thing, we were concerned about the facilities. We were concerned about having somebody up there in the winter of 60 and 61. And Wes Priebe had just graduated from LBI, and he was open and ready and willing. But to have somebody up there, I recall the fear that we had of one man staying up there all by himself. And I don't recall all the details of it, but he spent most of the winter there, as I remember, of that first winter. And we wanted to protect
Wes or somebody else?
Wes Priebe.
Yeah.
And you may be interested in this. When we were up there in the last of May, some of those lockers were filled with blankets and sheets and all that stuff from bottom to the top, just packed. When they got back there, sometime later, everything was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of material was gone from that time till the time we got West Prebo there,
mm-hmm.
in the fall of 60.
During that whole summer period, something happened.
Yeah, I hear there were whole trains of horses and pack horses and mules that were taken out going across the mountains west,
mm-hmm.
and that took stuff like that out of the village. In fact, we were told when we were going up there by the gal who took us up there, well, everybody takes something out because nobody wants the stuff. So we were quite concerned that we could preserve the things that were there.
The second winter, as I understand, there was somebody else in the place of Wes for that whole winter. Guy by the name of Reuben Johnson?
Yeah, Reuben was there, that's right.
Yeah.
Reuben was there.
He had a dog that was his own companion for the whole winter.
That's right.
Yeah. I recall listening to, I guess it was Wes Preeb's tape.
Did Wes Preeb stay part of that winter too?
I don't recall now exactly, but mm-hmm. if anybody's further interested in that, why they can look at the tape that's been made by Wes Preeb on his story as those early days. Again, let's come back to the formation of the purpose. You mentioned something, or at least alluded to something that was spelled out a little bit more definitively in the first articles of the corporation, or coming up with something to that effect?
We were dealing with the articles of incorporation, and we were trying to work out a purpose, a paragraph whereby we could make a statement of purpose, whereby if we had the purposes clear, then we could all work together toward that end. Let me just read a statement of purpose of the Articles of Incorporation. This is not the final one, but it was the one along the way. Holden Village is to be organized to provide a community for the refreshment of all kinds and conditions of men through worship, work, intercession, recreation, and meaningful conversation in a climate of mutual acceptance under the Lordship of Christ. We felt that would encompass the main object that we had in mind at the time.
You've been with the village a good number of years. You were on the board how many years?
I became a member of the board in 1963.
63.
And I continued until the retirement at LBI in 1979. But I think I continued after that until 1980.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the secretary in 1980. I was recording secretary
mm-hmm.
At that time. And that's the last I was up there for a board meeting, was in 1980.
But you have had enough of experience with the village over the years now to determine in your own mind just how faithful the village and its leaders and staff and so forth have been to that purpose that originally became part of the Articles of Incorporation. You feel that the village has remained faithful to those purposes, as you've read?
On the whole, I think so. I think that from my perspective, I felt that there was a great deal more of the heavy theology that they were working at that moved in, which a lot of people are interested in. But for the average layman, I was wondering if they went above them. At the same time, I can see real value in it. But you see, that was after we moved from the emphasis of youth into more of a retreat for more adults. In fact, after a while, we almost dropped youth entirely, and it became a Lutheran retreat. Before that, I think the emphasis was quite directed toward youth, and what that, and especially during the time when the youth departments were really in there. And it seemed, I don't recall just where they began to get moved out. Was that about 65?
Yeah, 66? It was, as I recall, it was toward the end of the 60s because the village was getting less and less funding from the national youth organizations of the church, and therefore had to make appeal to local congregations and congregations in the Midwest and so forth, and individuals for some support that was needed for some of the capital improvements that were so necessary to really make the village habitable. And we went through it, I guess, in the late 60s and early 70s, we went through a transitional period that we became more transgenerational. The emphasis again became on families.
On family, that's right. It became a family, not camp. One of the things we kept away from was a camp. We didn't want this ever to be called Holden Village Camp. We wanted it to be a Holden Village.
Yeah, that's one thing I learned from Carol Hindley in his period as director of the village, that this is not a Bible camp.
Yeah.
And I guess I had that drummed into my soul the times that I've been up there, that this is a village that seeks to carry out the Spirit of the Lord.
That's right.
The gospel. Mm-hmm.
Before that, we perhaps were moving in the direction of camp more than and Carol moved us away from that, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. Do you recall anything else here? You mentioned some of the other people that were involved also in those early years of the village.
I mentioned Dr. Compan. He was very much among the youth.
Mm-hmm.
Lloyd Nelson was another.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't have the names of all these men. They had slipped my mind. But I think that with Gilberg and all those men together, he became the mayor of Holden before Carol came into it. And he was a layman, very interested in this thing, and carried a lot of weight with the board. I wonder if he wasn't on the board to begin with. I don't recall the details of that, but he was asked to be the kind of an interim director until we found the director. One of the things we tried to do was we actually called Bergstrand. He had been the director of the youth of Augustana Synod for many years, and we felt that he would be an ideal person with all his background. So we tried to get him, but he apparently had a different call and went to Jamestown, New York instead, and carried on ministry there. We felt that he had a kind of a leadership that would have set the tone, especially for youth.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the emphases we were moving in the direction of at that time. So getting Carol then would move it from a different kind of a focus than what Bergstrand would have given it.
Well,
I don't think I'm disappointed with that. I haven't been disappointed with Holden. I have been, on the whole, very pleased with what God has done mm-hmm. through Holden Village. I don't think that, I suppose I have to say this, that my emphasis has been always, how is the Lord working? And am I willing and ready to move in with other people to see where the Lord is working? I think that it's easy for me or anybody to have too narrow a focus. And I may see things with blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to have that kind of a breadth of vision, that I can see that God is using various people with different backgrounds, with different emphasis. However, still my emphasis has been, whether it's youth or adults, a real personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And helping people to an assured faith. I think I was looking for more direct Bible study at home. where people would actually get more directly into the scriptures. Of course, this has been my field, but I have sensed and felt that throughout, whether it's at LBI or any other place, that the scripture is the inspired word of God, but is a vehicle through which the Holy Spirit does his work in men. So that I have felt if we replace it with the theology of men, instead of the study of the word, that we don't have the same power. At the first, we were looking for two leaders, one who we thought would be the director who would particularly work with the program, and then working with him, on par with him, would be one who would take care of the and be in charge of the physical plant, and so that the two could be working together. I think that the program director was one of the things we worked on quite a bit, duties and responsibilities. And what we expected of the program director. So the directorship had that as a special emphasis, and later on came the business manager. That was something that evolved out of this thing later on, but the executive director was no doubt the one who was going to also be the program director. I recall. And when we called Gil Berg, as I recall, he was the executive director of Holden Village for the beginning.
Right.
And I think what we were planning to do was to use Carol Hinderly then as the program director. But with the whole emphasis then, he became the director. And
Carol did.
Mm-hmm. And Gilbert backed out.
He became the manager then.
Yeah, he, well, I think he just backed away, and then Werner Jensen became became
the manager. But there was a year, wasn't there, when Gilbert was business manager,
yeah,
or something like that?
That's right. And I don't recall, but who was the program director? I think that was the first year when we had all these groups in there, like Bergstrand. I was in charge of the Parsonage Dwellers Retreat, and then there were others who came. I think there must have been four or five different groups. Oh yeah, LBI had another week there in 1961, which was just an LBI week for people who wanted that kind of an emphasis. So we had that first week, and I think I spent about 3 weeks up there during that first year.
Other than the Parsonage Dwellers, Forerunners, the LBI emphasis, Remember any names of any other groups that were up there?
Yeah, there must have been four or five different names. Each one took their own name.
Now what was this Tahikan thing I recall ever seeing, ever hearing about? It takes its name, of course, from the little village up the end of the lake. It's Tahikan program.
I don't recall.
Yeah.
I have to say, it seems to me that this was a group which wanted to find a good hiking road up to up to Tahikan. I think going through in that way. So I think that would be the group that would seek out Tahikan Trail up there and take groups up that way, so, as I recall.
Well, the one that you kind of headed up was the Parsonage Dwellers. Can you tell us about that?
The Parsonage Dwellers was were pastors and their families. Mm-hmm. And we had as our speaker the Bishop of Montana, Marshdale. I'm sorry, it slipped in my mind.
Okay, we might come back.
One of the things that I remember, I think I gave the Bible studies that week. He gave the special message to the living in the parsonage, mm-hmm. which was very, very good. We had really a wonderful time throughout. And the mornings were spent, first of all, in work, first part of the morning getting ready, and then a time for a Bible study, a time for a message, and then he also gave the evening. That was Rader Dahlin, who was the Bishop of Montana.
What was his name?
Rader Dahlin.
Dahlin.
Mm-hmm.
Dahlin, okay.
And some of the things that he shared with us really have stayed by some of us, I think. One of the things that he said from a very practical point of view that always stayed by me, I always felt whenever guests came into my house, they should have our bedroom, the very best we had. He said, this was wrong, because he felt we're the ones living there, and whoever comes as guests, they have to sleep in different beds anyway. So we should keep our own and have another place for them. I began to think about that, and I thought, that's an interesting point of view. Because I felt we ought to show our guests the very, very best. He said, but as a pastor, whoever the pastor is when guests come, if he's going to disrupt his regular place of work together with a guest, when the guest has a different place anyway, we do more harm to the plan that we have than we would otherwise.
Besides which, you're used to your own bed.
That's right. And I'd never thought of it from that point of view. And he did that. This is just an example. He did that with lots of things that it was good for a pastor to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because he came out of that kind of an experience and had seen what it had done. And so he did a lot of what we would call exhorting, helping, giving insights. And he also gave the evening message, as I remember.
This was in the summer of 60 or 61?
Of the summer of 61.
61.
Yeah. We had nothing, we had no program there in the summer of 60.
That was mostly trying to get the place back into shape.
That's right.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting, in 1961 when we were there, we did most of the cooking outside,
mm-hmm.
and we had an old stove that we used the bricks to hold it up, and they even baked bread there.
It was out behind Chalet 1, wasn't it?
In back of Chalet 1.
Yeah.
And we came out there to eat. We had a motor that we could get electricity from, a generator. And so whenever they started that, we'd use that for washing clothes. We used it also for shaving, various things. It was very, very primitive. And people thought at that time we should never, never lose that kind of frontier experience. They said we should never get regular electric lights. Many people thought that from the start. And kind of interesting, even the young people felt that way. However, we knew that we must have it.
The novelty wears off after a while.
That's right. And so it was very, very primitive. And of course, on windy days, because the lawns had gone to everything was dusty, a lot of dust. And that was kind of bad. We had to live with that. We got the dust off the tailings, and that wasn't so good. Transportation that summer was quite difficult. As I recall, we had a cattle truck, and we had a rope across it so people could hold on to that. And so the cattle truck going up those roads, that's quite an experience when you had a whole load of people standing up in the cattle truck going those 11 miles. We began to sense, as we went on, the dangers that were involved. We knew that there were dangers involved and that we needed good equipment. And so things moved from the more primitive to to better material as we moved along.
What physical work did you do in that restoration process?
I think we tried to clean up. We were working in the cleaning up of the barracks, and then getting things together so that we could have room for more and more. We were moving in the direction of having a special group out, I think in the fall of 1961, where they wanted a large group, and they did have. I heard tremendous things about that particular time. I wasn't there. But it was a really great time when I think literally hundreds of people came out, and how they handled all that. That would be another story all its own.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
But so our work was cleaning up, and then they found some old washing machines so that we could wash clothes once in a while with a generator. The gas generator is really what it was. And as a result, we washed clothes and did a lot of maintenance that we had to do. And also the all those buildings, the chalets, lots of work needed to be done there. One of the jobs that I did was to help a particular person from Ballard build a chimney. We built a chimney together. He did the fine work. I carried the bricks and the mortar for him, and that was a good job for me at that time. I remember we spent some time every day on that particular thing, because on that particular chalet, it was a number 4, the whole chimney was down. We had to build that from way down again and get a good chimney. I think we had to build quite a few of the chimneys because they had come down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still having problems.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, they had a few chimney fires here in the last couple years. I think they've got them pretty well now, all settled down.
One of the things I should bring in here, there's a song that brings out the fact, in work that keeps faith sweet and strong. One of the emphases that I got out of the summer of 61 was there seemed to be something, a very therapeutic for people, mm-hmm. to be able to work with their hands, and then also to have time for studying the word, time for prayer, and time for just intermingling, sharing what they've seen, what they've heard. And so the words really dug deep into my heart. In work that keeps faith sweet and strong, in trust that triumphs over wrong. And with that kind of an emphasis, I felt that there was something very, very helpful for the entire groups of people who would come.
I think that's the foundation for the whole principle behind Holden Village, because I remember my first introduction to the village, especially on the part of Carol Hennerly, was that you really don't own the village. You put a little sweat into it. And even that first summer that I got there in 65, they were laying the pipeline down from the diversion dam into the new hydro plant, doing some modification on that. So we were up on that after a while, which is an entirely different story.
Well, that's part of the whole.
Yeah, and you're behind the whole business.
And I think evolving out of that was volunteers. Mm-hmm. I know even the board at first, they were trying to pay for their travel and so on. And later on, we came up with the decision that board members were to pay their own expenses coming up. And I don't know how they're still doing it, but we did that for years, where we paid our own travel expenses. And if we were really interested in Holden, we should be there at least a week before the board meeting, so we get the feel of Holden. How can we, who don't know anything about Holden, come in there and then make the vital decisions that a board should make without having our hands dirty in the actual work of Holden? This is one of the emphases that came out of this, but it didn't come out first, it came out later on. I'm guessing around about 66 or something like that.
Yeah, if it's in the second half of the 60s that this really got going, and of course it's kept up and on down to this day. It's all part of being a part of the village.
And I think that's a good emphasis. I hope that we'll never lose that, because it's marvelous that people can learn to give themselves to something. And I know it's good for me. Without getting paid, the volunteer emphasis should be a strong emphasis at Holden Village.
I've been looking over my notes on this, Herman, and it seems that there are three questions that I thought could be used as some sort of guide in our discussion on your experiences at the village. When, why, and how? We have pretty well covered that. Early days, the year is 1661, and you joined the became official member of the board in 63. Is that what you said?
1963.
Yeah. How'd that happen?
At that time, youth boards would choose, I think it was three from each of them, which would be the nine from the three, and then there were those who were recommended by the board to the different synods. And so we would be representing the synod as such, and I was elected by the ALC to become a part of the board in 1963. And it was at that meeting, that first meeting, where I was on the regular board. I attended some of the board meetings before, but that I was actually a part of the board, that I was also elected at that time to be the secretary to the board. And I carried on as secretary until 1979, and then I think I did some secretarial work in 1980.
All right. We talked about the why a little bit too here. Do you think we've covered that sufficiently? Why you were involved in it?
I think that...
why you've continued to be involved in, even to this day, right?
Yeah, though I haven't been up there the past 4 years.
Yeah.
I still am involved. I send a gift every month to Holt Village, because I feel that this has become a part of my life. Holden is still a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And when my wife's health gets such that we can, I want to get back there again. But... I would say that the strong emphasis that I've had throughout the years has been a vision of what Holden, that's the vision I had at first, that Holden should be a retreat place for where people could actually get away from the mundane of life into a new setting, and also be inspired by the teaching and preaching of the Word of God, and that through that whole picture, they'd come back more effective as lay people in the congregation. The pastors themselves would be renewed. I think the emphasis of renewal took on a meaning right from the very start, and that the place itself should in itself, without the program, be a renewing, but that the program would add a plus to that renewal that people should have.
When you talk about program, can you illustrate that particular aspect of Holden's life? Of course, we're referring to the teaching staff. We used to call faculty, we call them now teaching staff, along with the permanent staff and the volunteer staff. How do you think the program has been contributing to life at the village, life in the church itself, young life, middle age, old life, whatever, the totality of a person?
It seems to me that people who have been at Holden come back to me and say, what a wonderful experience. And it was a renewing for me, that sense of renewal. And for instance, if I go down to Oregon, I'm traveling someplace, and somebody's, if I mention Holden, oftentimes I'll, in my one of my Bible studies or messages, will say something about something that happened at Holden, and somebody will come up and say, yes, I was at Holden, and it was so meaningful for me. And I think where there's been a lot of people who have really been blessed through Holden has been when there have been a number from a different congregation where they've come up together, mm-hmm. and gone home, and they've carried on the, shall I say, the Holden spirit. I think they've had more of that in the Midwest than they have here, where a number of people would come out together. And I believe that Holden Village has fulfilled its function in being a place of renewal.
Renewal for the total congregation.
Yeah. Not only for the youth, to begin with it was youth, but for the entire congregation. I think from my perspective, I've seen so oftentimes that the leadership of the deeper life in Christ has so oftentimes been the women of the church. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that Holden has done is to help men to see their place as leaders in the church. That lay people really would move in and be the spiritual leaders the Lord would want them to be. I thank God for the women who have done so. But it seems to me that if there's to be a strength there, men have to also be strong leaders. And I think Holden has been used to help that whole aspect of men taking their place as leaders in the church.
How much different from the origins of the village is the village now, from your perspective? Has there been a radical change of any type, or has it slowly evolved? But even in the evolution of it, from those first few years to the early 80s now, can you see any radical change, or has it gone along the way you hoped and prayed it would go?
I am not really sure. The fact that I haven't been there now since 1980, mm-hmm. I have missed 81, 82, 83, 84, so that's 4 years I've mm-hmm. missed. And there's kind of a vacuum there. I haven't seen the minutes or seen what's happened there. So I get very little direct contact with Holden as a result. So I'm not sure whether now they have. Knowing Elmer Witt, I think that he was along right from the very beginning. And I would feel, having had seen him last spring when he first came, that he would carry out the plan we really had from the start. I don't know how Schramm filled that part the last years or not, whether he did. I think he did. I was there for his dedication and, installation. And that was a great day, a wonderful day. And I felt that he carried out a ministry not only at Holden but also through the churches as he traveled around, and his wife as well. I think he had a little different emphasis on the social aspect of the gospel. I'm not sure. Sometimes I worry a little bit that the social aspect of the gospel doesn't find its roots in the assurance of faith that people ought to have. I feel that that people should first of all know their relationship with the Lord, have that very strong, and then out of that should grow the social ministries. And so I wasn't close enough to see whether or not that was being carried out. I am concerned of the strong rootage, rooted in the scriptures, rooted in personal relationship with the Lord. And whether that's been carried out or not, I'm not sure.
Mother, earlier we had talked about, and you had really talked about it, that Holden has a tendency to change people, to have some sort of positive impact upon their lives, which if they're church members, they go back to their own congregation as perhaps better church members and more imbued with the real vision of what discipleship is all about. And by the same token, the directors that we've had, those who are leaders in the history of Village now, have had a similar impact upon the life in the village, the philosophy of the village, the spiritual tone of the village. In the early days, I've met Gil Berg and got acquainted with him, and he was the right man for that time. Carol Hinderly was the right man for his time, his 14 years tenure at the village. John Trim, I think, was out of the context of those years that he was there, I think he was the right man for it. And now I have the same feeling about Elmer, who kind of reverts back to those original years.
Yes.
And is going to tie the whole thing together again in his own way. But by the same token, the impact that they have on the village, they are also impacted by the village. I think these men grow. I know I've grown just by being on the board for the number of years I have.
And I have grown. I think being on the board has helped me tremendously to get a broader view of my place as a member of the church, body of Christ, of the church. And I have been very, very blessed through Holden Village. And I agree with you. Kind of interesting. I have to learn this, that if there's a place that I disagree on a point, I've learned that I have to disagree agreeably.
Yeah.
And if I wait long enough, I'll see maybe I wasn't as right as I thought I was. Somebody else's point of view
right. May
be more valid than my own. And I think being in a place like Holden, you get that perspective. And that's been good for me.
Yeah. It's been free and open discussion there.
Yeah.
And the form of life is really the lifestyle as far as a conversation is concerned.
And I think the one thing that I really appreciated was the evening vespers, that everybody was called on to attend. They didn't have to attend all the other sessions, but this one session, that was a family time. And that together with the Lord's Supper, the ministry on Sunday night particularly, but also all through the week. It was a growing thing. The music up there was a very, very vital part of this whole thing. And, the art, all the art that took place. I think that Holden is a very special place where people who have gifts, talents, abilities can not only discover them, but let them be worked out. I like to put it this way, that when a person has a particular gift or talent that God gives them, that they need to be polished by use, and that God will polish them as they put them to use, and they'll become more effective as a result. And I think that whole aspect of the abilities that people have that they brought to Holden, and then the leadership that's moved into that area to help people to grow. A lot of people have done things at Holden they never even thought they'd ever do. And as a result, no doubt that broadened their entire aspect of life. He said, that's mine.
Well, not only the spiritual and intellectual challenge that you have there, but the physical, just walking around up there, because of the various levels you have in the village itself.
Right.
Going up to the mine entrance and climbing that road, or climbing any of the trails around there to the various lakes and peaks and so forth. That's quite a challenge.
And then rubbing elbows with all kinds of people. People from all the different parts of the United States, and
yeah,
oftentimes foreign countries. Those have been big, big times in the life of people who've been there. And you've had some wonderful, wonderful people who have shared them, their very self up there. And some of them are gone.
Yeah. Well, they've gone to their home.
Yeah, they moved. And they got there ahead of us.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, that's one reason we're trying to do this oral history of those early years, so that we have something for the next generation, so to speak, to be able to listen to and take care of, and perhaps even follow.
This is the 25th anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. My timer went off here.
Yeah.
We're just about at the end of this tape, which is a good thing. Irwin, I thank you very much for your participation
this afternoon. I'm a little...
As I get into this whole business of gathering the interviews and tapes and documents, I find myself becoming more and more aware of the real impact of Golden mm-hmm. Village and the sum total, well, let's say the total of impact of the village is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And that is due to the Spirit of Christ.
Yeah.
That is very evident
mm-hmm.
in the village itself. Thanks again.
We didn't mention this, but you may want to keep that in mind, that if the one of the things that just comes to the top of my head right now is the fact that we're not just ALC, we're not just Missouri Synod, we're not just LCA, but we're, I think, in a real sense, the body of Christ, forgetting labels pretty much.
Yeah.
And I think Holden, that's perhaps one of the strong